Welcome to Middle School Matters podcast number 677. You, hallway, now. We've got some jokes for you. We've got some serious things about you in the hallway, and we're going to talk about some AI this week. So without further ado, here's the wonderful, the magnanimous, the Mr. Troy Patterson.
All right, welcome back to the show. I am Troy Patterson, and with me is the world's greatest co-show host, Mr. Sean McGurr. Hey, Sean.
Well, hello there. How are you?
I am well. I've recovered from a fatal computer update.
Ooh.
I've updated almost everything to OS 26. And there's an issue that I have when I'm updating my iMac that if I don't unplug everything, it is not happy. And naturally, since I don't update like constantly, I forget this. And so usually I do the update and it'll tell me there's a problem. And then I unplug, I go, oh yeah. And then I unplug everything and then it finishes the update and we're all good. That did not happen this time.
Oh.
This time I got the dreaded, you're going to need another Mac to, to fix this. So, I go, okay. So, drag another Mac into the office area here. And I had to do the whole DFU process and had to revive my Mac. So, I did. And it worked, and everything's back now, but I have not updated to OS 26 because I figured, you know, let's do a podcast first, and then we'll do the update and see what happens and all that good stuff. But,
and one of the things that people don't know is before the show, I always ask them, hey, let's do updates, right?
Let's do updates.
I teased about that.
Yeah. It's kind of similar to the coin factory where every machine broke down all of a sudden without explanation.
Really?
Yeah, it just doesn't make any sense.
Ah.
The coin factory?
Yeah. Right? Yeah, paying for the thoughts to get it fixed, right?
Yeah, that's right. Probably costs right. Some more than that.
Yeah. Well, they don't make pennies anymore, so it wasn't that factory.
That's right. That's right. Well, so do we have to change that saying then? Is it now like a nickel for your thoughts or? Or does it change the meaning?
Yet.
Does it change the meaning of the expression? Does it mean that it's much more, your thoughts are much more valuable now because pennies will be in limited resource? So.
And will that change my contract?
Yeah. Their value, the value of a penny could go up, right?
Well, actually, if we're going to go into the weeds, let's go into the weeds.
We really don't have a lot for the show this week, so we're going to talk about pennies.
So, actually, there are people out there, and I had kids that were doing this. There were kids, and I forget the date, but there's a date where a penny was full copper penny, and there's a date where it's a copper clad.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
And there were kids at one time who were saving the full copper pennies because they were hoping at some point in time the government would say, it's okay to melt down the copper because right now you can't melt it down because you can't deface currency. Actually the value has changed, just not in ways that we would expect.
So in September, as of September of 1982, they were 95% copper, 5% zinc.
Okay.
Starting in October of 1982, they're copper plated zinc, 97.5% zinc, 2.5% copper. Got it. And they also weigh less.
Yes, that's true.
They're lighter. that way.
Yep. You can feel the difference, yep.
From 3.11 grams down to 2.5 grams.
It's funny we're talking about American money and referring to metric system. How many grammas did you say?
Grams, not grandmas.
Oh.
I did call my grandma Grams, though. Graham, though.
Yeah. There you go.
You
couldn't have gotten a penny for her.
You know, here's a thought for it. Here, I have a couple of thoughts for you.
I got a penny. Number one. cost you way too much to come and get it.
Yeah, no fooling. I don't know. I should take a trip back to Michigan sometime soon. We'll see. People snapping daily selfies with one of those sticks need to take a good long look at themselves. That got reaction out of Sean than anticipated.
I got a person in my mind right now. I'm thinking her name is Snow.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think of her doing that all the time with that. How popular selfie sticks were, like, I could not believe the number of selfie sticks that were sold in Beijing. That just blew my mind. Yeah.
There's a lot of things about Beijing.
Well, we saw it did a lot of things. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
And as I get older, I realize that we need more things that come in the opposite of a child-proof container.
Yeah. Yep.
During all of the times that I've lived on a farm or visited one, mm-hmm. I have never seen anyone look for a needle in a haystack.
That's true. Yeah.
That's true.
I have to say that I'm in that same spot.
You're in the same field, so to speak.
Yeah, I did. I do remember folks looking for thistle needles, but not the
that
same.
Is never,
not the same.
It
at
has
all.
Never got past your eyes.
That's true. Yes. Yes.
Hey, why couldn't the sailor find their playing cards?
The sailor could not find them. That's tragedy on a boat. Like
I know.
You're doing this because of yesterday's themed National Day?
No.
No? Okay. All right. Well, then I don't know.
They were standing on the deck.
Oh, sure.
And now we have to tell people what the theme of yesterday was. I forgot to let people know last week that yesterday was this day in the future. And now it's in the past, so people can't participate.
But you could get ready for next year. So
you can get ready for next
being
year.
Being forewarned. Yeah.
Every year, September 19th is Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Over at middleschoolmatters.com, I have a comic strip from the Argyle Sweater by Scott Hilburn that I immediately sent off to the wonderful Sean McGurr when I saw this one. Because it has two things in it, two mm-hmm. things that I thought were of interest for Sean. Because we talk frequently about one, about his passion in supporting one. And we talk about his passion in supporting the second one, even though he's wrong. Wrong, wrong, wrong. So head over to middleschoolmatters.com and find out what Sean is passionate about and what Sean is passionate about but wrong.
Kids this week.
Kids this week.
the kids this week, I wrote on the board, and they, one of them, being a snort, said, "Miss McGurr, I can't read that. That's in the thing you say I'm wrong about." And I said, yeah. Looked them right at them, and I said, "Well, it's time to learn." The other kids were like, "Yeah." I was like, "I did not expect that.
I did not expect that.
I'll take it. I did not expect that." Yeah. So.
Okay.
All right.
Well, you know what's not wrong, but absolutely right, is engineering in middle school.
Oh, that's true. Yes.
That's true. And this week is, like always, is just a wonderful resource, and we are very happy that that Dave Bidlowski has once again joined the show. So here, without further ado, is the wonderful Mr. Dave Bidlowski and the Middle School Science Minute.
Hi, this is Dave Bidlowski of K12Science.net, and this is your K-12 Science Podcast. I was recently reading the September-October 2025 issue of Science Scope, a magazine for middle school science teachers published by the National Science Teaching Association. And I read the section from the editor's desk written by Patty McGinnis. And she wrote an article entitled Engineering in the Middle School Science Classroom. And she said that one of the most exciting aspects of the next generation science standards has been the addition of engineering standards. While science education traditionally focuses on understanding natural phenomena, engineering provides students with hands-on, practical application of science principles. As a result, she has always found that students eagerly engage with design challenges, in part because they allow students to be creative, while at the same time requiring them to think critically and collaborate effectively. However, integrating engineering into the middle school classroom is not without its challenges. One of the most significant obstacles is the lack of resources and time. Many middle school science teachers are under pressure to cover vast amounts of content within a limited time frame. The inclusion of engineering activities adds further pressure to an already packed curriculum. Additionally, engineering activities may require specialized materials, tools, and technologies that are not readily available in many schools. Finally, while science educators are traditionally well-versed in scientific theory and concepts, they may have limited experience with engineering practice such as design thinking, prototyping, and iteration. Indeed, research from the American Society for Engineering Education suggests that teacher professional development is crucial for effective STEM integration. Yet, many educators do not receive sufficient training in engineering or problem-solving approaches. This knowledge gap can understandably lead to frustration and uncertainty when integrating engineering concepts into the science classroom. If all of this sounds familiar, she encourages us to seek out professional development opportunities designed to develop our confidence when it comes to teaching engineering. And she said that if you're looking for engineering ideas, peruse sites such as teachingengineering.org or tryengineering.org, both of which contain a searchable database of next-generation science standard-aligned activities. While the inclusion of engineering may find some of us out of our comfort zone, it is a valuable opportunity for students to practice and apply what they have learned while equipping them with the tools to innovate, solve problems, and think like future engineers. And this has been your K-12 Science Podcast.
I think it's kind of universal, the whole idea of teacher professional development and teachers being prepared for some of these things as well. So this is really cool. So check that out. Speaking of professional development and teachers being prepared for things, We had a wonderful conversation pre-show, which really I should have recorded, but I didn't know we were going to have. And so I'm going to kind of bring it back up here. And that's addressing AI with students. And this kind of started when Sean relayed an incident that I'm going to ask him to relay again, because I'm actually recording now, about a student getting an assignment and saying, why can't I just do this with ChatGPT? And yes, that's exactly how he talks. So
it's
So Sean, you gave them an assignment. What was the assignment, just for a little bit of context?
So I do, my kids do presentations. They do one presentation a quarter. Sometimes they'll do two in the fourth quarter. And by the time we get to the fourth quarter, they want to do two because it's, so my students have to do a presentation each quarter. This quarter, it's going to be on ancient Egypt, right? And I went to ISTE this summer and listened to all of the people talk about, you know, AI is coming, ethical use. What do we do? How do we keep, worksheets are definitely going to be on the, I don't want to say chopping block, but they're going to be, any straight up worksheet you can create, the kids can then just simply take and use the ChatGPT or AI to undo. Right. And so we've got to come up with projects and project-based learning, which has the kids doing higher level thinking where they're taking information and synthesizing it rather than just copy pasting without engaging the brain. So my kids have to do a project. Right. And one of the kids did say, why can't we just use ChatGPT to do this? And I explained to them, I said, well, one of the problems is that AI in general is about 38% of the time it's wrong. And you being 12 and 13 years old, you just don't have that life experience to know which is telling the truth and which is not telling the truth. And I don't want you to get up and explain something that's completely factually wrong and incorrect to us. And I don't want you to embarrass yourself in front of the entire group. So I'm going to ask you to do things the old way, the old fashioned way, so that you understand how to understand what is true and what is false. So that later on in life, you're able to discern the difference between what's true and what's not. And you can discard the lies, or not lies, but the hallucinations, and refine and take just the good stuff and use that. And I was pleasantly surprised to see them nod their heads like, yeah, you know what? You're right. We aren't old enough to have that discernment yet. And we don't know everything, and we don't want to embarrass ourselves. And so it was a nice thing to see. I did not think they were going to take it that way, but that's the route I went, and it worked. So your mileage may be different.
Yeah, that was one of the things that was, I think, memorable or remarkable, or I'm not sure what word I'm looking for there, when we were having that discussion. Is that the kids going, yeah, I don't know things. Because I think that's frequently the issue with AI, is that kids are looking at, like, I don't know it, but I don't need to know it because that thing knows it. It's... One of those, even working with adults, when I work with adults, and adults think that since it comes from the computer, it's got to be right. Right? It's coming from this authoritative thing that people don't look at a computer as lying to them. So it's got to be right. You know, it's like... since it doesn't have that humanness, it's got to be right. And that's one of the things that, like, I'm concerned about, is that whoever has control over the AI can control the perception of reality pretty easily. So, and for kids, I really worry because they're now saying that LLMs fundamentally are going to hallucinate, like they can't get rid of it. And I thought that was interesting as well. So if it's going to continue to be wrong, then kids need to know that. And the thing is I think kids are going to understand that maybe quicker than adults because they're growing up with it and they have a different perspective. But I don't know. We'll see.
Interesting.
But I think I wonder how much of it was the wrong part and how much was the embarrassed part.
Oh, I'm just taking the win. I don't know. That's a good question. And I did throw the embarrassed part. I will tell that was kind of like putting my thumb on the scale too, because I did throw the embarrassed part in there because I know that that's a big factor with seventh graders, right? And middle school kids in general is they don't want to be embarrassed. And I knew that I could get them to listen to everything else I was saying. Maybe if I threw that in there as a look, this is a self-defense mechanism. You're protecting yourself here. Yeah. So, you know, maybe we do that. So, yeah, we had an interesting AI discussion. Matter of fact, I'm going to, I threw it in the show notes and I put it somewhere else in the show.
Okay.
For our in-depth look at things.
Yeah. And, I do believe that that is, that teachers, that we need to teach AI competencies, but teachers need to know what those AI competencies are in order to teach them.
Yeah, and you and I talked about that historically this has always been an issue. It's not just AI. It's been other types of things that have disrupted education or technology that has been in the home and taught by parents first in one way that could be abused or misused in the classroom another way. And so I asked you, what are the principles? Because obviously we've grown, developed, changed, and modified something in order to make these things not just toys, but also tools or made it fit into the classroom somehow. And I asked you what kinds of principles, what kinds of characteristics of working those changes should we be employing with AI?
So, yeah, this was kind of a response to both of us have an interest in history and both of us have an interest in education, obviously, and the educational process. And I think back to even times where, you know, they said TV was going to revolutionize education. And there's been a couple of movements. There was the belief that we were going to do tons of remote learning because it was going to be TV based and you would watch the expert from one spot and then from there you'd connect up somehow and that kind of went away. Nobody really looks at TV as being a real educational component. We do look at teachers certainly use TV resources, but it's become a resource. Teachers frequently use video, and video has some real power to it. Can help kids learn, but the whole idea of TV itself being the platform it's kind of been just enculturated into what education is and what teachers do. It's been more of the video part rather than the TV part that's taken hold. But you have to think back that like when TV came out, and Sean's a bit younger than me, so he probably doesn't know this, or he certainly didn't live through it, but he also studies history, so he might know a little bit about it. But TV was going to destroy everyone's eyesight. And TV was going to...
I am younger and less intelligent. No. Keep going. It's a joke.
I didn't say less intelligent.
No, I'm just... It's, keep going. You're good.
Okay, I said younger.
That's younger, all I said. Sorry, not less intelligent. Younger and less experienced.
Okay, so... So TV was going to ruin your eyesight, and it was going to destroy society because everyone was going to be stupid. It was the idiot box, right? That's why it was called the idiot box. It was going to turn us all into idiots. And somehow, we have survived that. And it turns out, even though there was, quote, research back in the day that it was going to ruin your eyesight, turns out TV does not ruin your eyesight. Unless you sit fixed on one area at a time. And that's true if you keep your eyes at almost any plane, right? If your eyes need to focus at different levels, at different depths. So it's not, the TV doesn't destroy your eyesight, and it doesn't make you an idiot. So we've lived through that, and now it's like we're worried about AI. I think we need to be worried about AI. I don't know what the answers are. I just keep trying to think and understand the context of AI and what it is and what it's going to be and how we should teach it, because there's a whole bunch of people who are selling a vision of AI, and they're selling a vision, and I'm using those words really carefully, because they are selling a vision. They are trying to make money. We're a capitalistic society. There's nothing wrong with making money. And they're trying to make money and trying to convince people that there's a need for it and a desire for it and a market for it, and they can fill that. So there's tons of money running into AI right now on the hope that they're going to get that money back in logarithmic fashion in the future. So, we got to be thoughtful about it. So
I think if we look to see where Pearson goes with this, it'll give us an idea. I don't mean that. That sounded way too cynical. It's not cynical at all. It's just, I think if you look to see the direction that Pearson is steering with this, then you're going to see where everybody goes, because there are two factors. One, Pearson is going to try and get ahead and be the first to market with something, even if they have to buy something else to be first into the integration of that into the market. And then, second of all, a lot of teachers and admins will go straight to the thing that comes with the other product, the book, the resource, whatever, and they'll just adopt that and use that. And then that's how the market will be. That's where it'll be. That's what everybody will use.
Pearson does own a huge part of the market. So where they go. Lots of people will be following. That's true.
And it'll come free with your purchase of a set of textbooks.
I always love when things, it's going to be free as long as you spend.
Right. Spend $23,000 on books and we'll throw this in too. It didn't cost us a thing.
Yeah.
Sorry. That was also cynical, and I don't mean to be cynical, but.
That's all right. All right, well, let's, it's something we're going to be continuing to talk about, because it's something that is on everyone's mind at this point. So we'll continue talking about it. But let's take a look at the social web as well.
The social web? Oh, yeah, let's take a look at the social web. Susie Dent, it's really short this week. Susie Dent, today offer a reminder of the word for swunk. And I think we actually used this one before. It's a 13th century word. Exhausted from too much work. And that's where I've been this week. To be forsunk, my own version, is to be exhausted before you even begin. And you know what? That was called Thursday and Friday. Yeah, I was very happy to see Friday come this week. It was a lot of work. And next week is going to be the same. Parent-teacher conferences, not conferences, open house. Open house is coming, meetings, all kinds of extra work coming this week. So, yay for swunked. Next week is for swunked already. There you go.
All right.
Yeah. Lady Worsley, not Lady, Lucy Worsley, at Lucy Worsley, underscore Worsley. Announcement. By the way, she used to be in charge of Kensington Castle and a number of other castles owned by the monarch of England. And she retired from that job, and now she just goes back into the same places where she worked and makes videos about them. And one of them is she's going to, coming next year to BBC, and probably eventually PBS here in the United States, a palatial new series for you. And one of the places she's going is like Blenheim Palace and some other of the palaces that are not monarchical, is the right word, maybe. So Lucy Worsley does houses of the formerly rich and famous. How's that? Historically rich and famous. There we go. That's it. All right. Middle web. New. How to grow a culture of thinkers in our classrooms when teachers build classrooms and how to and around how students think. They unlock a learning environment where curiosity replaces, I can't read today, and compliance and excitement replaces dread. And Kathy Palmieri has written an article about a book review over at Middleweb about that. I encourage you to go over there. I encourage you to subscribe to their Reddit. Dr. Norton does a wonderful job collating and putting together lots and lots of resources on Middleweb. And he was also inducted into the AMLE Hall of Fame last year at AMLE. So this year will be his 1 year coming up here in about, 5-6 weeks? That's awesome. 1 year anniversary for that. So, yeah.
So you said something interesting that to follow them on Reddit.
Yeah, he runs a Reddit site, and that's how Middleweb makes their money now. Advertising just isn't enough to make it all go. And Dr. Norton, it's him, his wife, and his daughter, and they run the whole site. Then they use reviews from generous educators around the country and books and articles and all kinds of things, resources they bring in to that website. But the site is supported primarily through their Reddit page and a Reddit subscription.
So now I have questions. How many Reddit sites do you follow?
So,
how many educational Reddit sites do you follow?
So, I get Middleweb in my email box, and I get the free version. I am a hypocrite because I don't subscribe to this wonderful site.
I'm not calling you out, but I want to be clear.
I'm being honest with our audience. When I get the money, I am gonna definitely support Dr. Norton. When it comes to Reddit itself in general, I don't. I am not as avant-garde as many others, including yourself. I do every now and then I dabble, but by and large, like a lot of the Reddit stuff that I find is going to be, hey, I got this problem, and then there's several other different solutions, and here's what I found. That's by and large my Reddit experience. I know it's much more vast than that. I just have not tapped that for that part yet. And I say yet, it's been 20 years. I very much go to other places for most stuff. And really, MiddleWeb, I depend on his email him to send out his newsletter.
Okay. Can I ask a question? Are you sure it's MiddleWeb Reddit versus Substack?
Oh, you know what? It is a Substack.
Okay.
It is a Substack. You're right.
Okay. So, okay.
Pardon me while my ignorance is showing.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
Let me cover up here for a second.
This is one of those things. It's like there's Reddit, there's Discord, there's Slack, there's websites, there's Substack, there's
4 13-hour workdays this past
there's
week.
There's Blue Sky, there's Mastodon, there's all these different places that we could go. And there's Element, right? Which was a new one for me.
I forgot about
that
one.
It's like, so there's all these different places, and that was more of my where I was getting to is like, how often do you go here versus here versus here? And because I have several resources that are on Discord. I rarely open Discord unless it's like, oh yeah, I should go check that out. And then it's like, you have 7,958 unread posts. Yeah. It's like, okay. Right. So that's why I was like, because I use Reddit, mostly for photography and a couple of open source things. So
I can picture that.
I get the, a little snapshot there, my world for you. So like I use it for hobbies, but so it was interesting. It's like, I haven't used it for education much. How does that work out for you? But okay. So anyway, on Substack, there's a little controversy about Substack as well, but I will put a link to the Substack in the show notes as well. So
yeah, when Dr. Norton started this, it was all on a listserv.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's how MiddleWeb started and MiddleTalk started. MiddleTalk was the listserv for the conversation side of the MiddleWeb listserv, and that of course listserv servers are pretty much gone. But see if there's folks that want to join the MiddleTalk. MiddleTalk moved over to Facebook, and I know Facebook is becoming passé, but it's still active over there. Folks are still talking.
Unless you live in Maine.
Well, that's true. I forgot we talked about that. You're right. Maine, it's thriving and well. What about MySpace in Maine?
No, it's Facebook.
Is that still a go? I didn't even look to see if MySpace is still around.
As we both start, you might hear keyboards clicking as we both go to.
I wonder.
There is a MySpace site. Lots of pictures.
Oh, featured
seems
content.
To be like all pictures.
I'll sign in. Oh, that's not a picture. Yeah, I'm going to leave here. This is gone. Nope. It's gone.
Okay.
Apparently MySpace is MySpace, or at least where I went. MySpace is now in the red light district of the internet.
Oh, okay.
I won't be visiting. Thank you.
So there is the listservs have been they've evolved into, I think, Discord and Slack and Google Groups. Wait a minute. Google Groups still exist. There's a couple of OER groups on Google that are beneficial that Sean gets resources from every once in a while, even though he doesn't know. It's like, oh, Sean, look at this. I seriously do every once in a while go, poor Sean. He's probably sitting there trying to do something and up pops this. Hey, you might like this. kind of thing.
No, those are all good things. The irony is I just looked up free list, create your own listserv, and the very first thing that pops up is free listserv alternative.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's workshops on how to do it, but really nobody's creating listservs. They're all doing Google stuff.
They're doing newsletters too. I think newsletters are really the kind of the hot thing right now. Or a podcast. Everybody has a podcast.
Oh, that's
not
true.
Everybody has been doing it for 18 years though. So
that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, let's take a look at some strategies here.
Oh, strategy. Oh. So,
yeah.
I asked Troy a question earlier, and I said, Troy, this is back during our what we should have recorded, but we didn't. And I said, so because we've had transformative games, technology, tools, electronics, all kinds of things, there's got to be some principles of ways that we've handled it in the past that we could apply these things today. To help us, you know, how could we look at the way other people have solved this problem and go, ooh, that's a good one. Not going to work that one. We're not going to use that one. Ooh, this might be. So I went and I made some things for Troy. And so I'm going to pick his brain. Ready? All right. So I called these strategies for adopting transformative technology, a brainstorming session. We'd like to welcome our brainstormer, Troy, to the show today. And Troy, I'd like to talk about several maybe strategies that might be possible for helping us adapt. For example, if we have the problem that students may prefer shortcuts, you know, copy-paste answers, TikTok summaries, over deeper learning, there was a strategy suggested that balancing tradition with innovation might be a solution to this. Schools doubling down on maybe some other types of things that don't involve technology to solve this. What do you think about that?
I think somebody has used ChatGPT.
Absolutely.
to formulate a discussion here.
I'm not interested in ChatGPT. Let's ignore that for a moment, and let's talk about the human involved.
I have to tell you that I was in, I was kind of working with somebody, and I was reading through some stuff, and I'm just like, this was done with ChatGPT. This is ChatGPT. Or an LLM, I should say. I'm not sure which. I'm guessing they use ChatGPT, but and they were very proud of this work stuff, and I was suspicious because I was like, "This is ChatGPT. Did they check this? Is this accurate?" I just, you know, like all of those safeguards that you want to go through. It's like, did they go through the safeguards? You know, can I trust what they're presenting to me? And I think that's one of the things that, like, now it's like, if I was talking to a principal from another school, you know, there comes with that, you know, a middle school principal, it's like, all right, cool. They know their stuff, what they say. But now it's like, wait a minute, this looks like ChatGPT, and did they check it or did they just go with it? So I find myself like being thoughtful about what they're saying to me is like, okay. So anyway, what was the question?
Balancing tradition with innovation. Yeah. Sean used an AI tool to help him brainstorm and generate some strategies for transformative technology.
So this one, you know, balance tradition with innovation, I think is something that we've been dealing with for, well, forever, but specifically last 25 years with technology. How do you use technology? What do you do with it? And as longtime listeners may remember, I ended up identifying myself as a constructivist after getting in a classroom and going, oh, oh, you know what works better is when the kids are making meaning. So as a very, very young pup in the classroom, figured out it was the person doing the work is the person doing the learning, that I needed to make sure the kids were doing the work. So one of the ways I was able to do that was to utilize technology and utilize some of the computers and things that we had so that they were doing the creation and the work. And I've seen, you know, I've had friends who were teachers and they're like, yeah, I use technology. And it's like, you're handing out a worksheet. Yes, it is on a computer, but you're handing out a worksheet. And, you know, so there was that balancing tradition with innovation. It's one of the things I think I've been trying to focus on for the last 25 years is like, let the kids do the work. Let the kids do the learning. Use technology that way. So,
all right. So let's factor into your thinking about the transformative technology adaptation. Ethical framing of use. Like, so for example, students use technology impulsively. Plagiarism, inappropriate sharing, unkind moments, hurrying to get things done so they can go and play games on Google sites.
Yeah, and that's the thing that we're, that's another thing that, like, what is school for? And, you know, responsible citizenship has always been one of those things. So ethics and ethical use of whatever is, I think, one of the charges that we have that we frequently argue about as society, right? We judge schools frequently by test scores, by multiple choice standardized test scores, and those don't measure ethics, responsibility, a lot of times critical development. They are a singular spotlight on certain things.
I thought it was interesting that a lot of ISTE this summer was talking about this, but it was entirely on the ethical use by teachers on using AI, protecting student information. They didn't take this side of it, which is kind of where I thought they might go, but they didn't. So that's something that the AI came up with. Critical evaluation and discernment. We've talked about discernment before, discernment being a really key skill that kids need to have in order to be able to use AI. And the question then becomes, how do we teach discernment? And I think it, I'm going to put all of this in the show notes, but when it talks about the modern application of critical evaluation and discernment, they're talking about a responsible or gradual release, teaching the kids to use it in steps. And that's something also that came out of ISTE this year I got it out of the class that I finished with ISTEU. That doing a gradual release approach, don't give them everything all at once, because it, you know, if they can go from 0 to 60, they will. Instead, give it to them in stages, teach them to be responsible at different stages along the way, so that they know when to set their own guardrails as they're going on. The other suggestions, and I won't belabor this, poor Troy, he's suffered enough here. Number four is practical skills building, which I think is good, because then the kids see the value of what good use of AI is, and then teach them what the bad looks like have it do something and then have it generate, you know, the bad example and go, okay, so How do we recognize the difference between the two? And then lastly, community and civic responsibility. Students, you know, misuse technology and they're going to use it, whether it's a pencil or they're going to misuse it if it's a Chromebook. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's one we're fighting all the time, every day. And lastly, lifelong learning and adaptability. And that kind of goes towards Troy's argument before the show was, are we teaching them for the past or are we teaching them for the future? And I thought this was a nice thing. I didn't even ask AI to come up with this. And it came up with the lifelong learning and adaptability. And then, and Troy got faster to this part of the show than I expected. So I don't have that part in the show notes yet, but I'll get that in there.
But got places to be, things to do.
That's right. It's a show to do, Sean. Get with it. But projects like podcasts, and that's where the adaptability part comes in, framing mistakes and then learning from those mistakes so that we can do better in the future. Sorry, go ahead. Yeah. That was the last part.
No, that's all right. It's been, since I've been in education, it's been one of those questions that has persistently come up. Are we teaching kids for our past or for their future? And that's just been a consistent question. And I think it's a good frame of reference. I think it's something we all need to deal with and just to make sure we're making intentional, good choices. So, you know, all right. Yeah, speaking of intentional choices.
Yeah. I was going to say, if we only had a machine.
Have you ever played with Teachable Machine?
I did. I just generated a whole list of reasons for AI and principles for integration using a Teachable Machine.
So, well, this is specific. This is Teachable Machine, and it's that with Google. And it's a neat little site because it creates machine learning models. And it's a neat way of kids starting to understand how some of these AI things work. So it's basically you do a gather, a train, and an export. And it's pretty neat because the kids get to do the work and then they see some of the results. So, you know, they're not getting necessarily all of the learning all the algorithms, but for middle school kids and potentially elementary kids, upper elementary, I would say, could use it as well. But there's a bunch of resources here as well. So you can check it out. I think it is a neat thing because, again, it's the kids doing the work and they can play around with it and start to truly understand kind of what it is and how it works. So you might want to check that out. If you are a district that has Google Gemini, over at Ditch That Textbook, Matt Miller, had to get his name. I had Matt, had to get last name. Matt Miller has a 101 for teachers, getting started with Google's AI assistant. And I think this is really valuable for people to start to, if you haven't played around with it, it's pretty comprehensive and can give you some great ideas in using it and how to use it. I would put in a couple of caveats, and that is to be very careful about any data that you're uploading about students. So one of the things that he has in here is about IEP-aligned assignments. Just be wise and make sure you're not putting names in there. And make sure you're following good FERPA ideas. It's the only caveat I would throw in there. And let's see, we're going to do one more. Okay. This is, it's another AI experiment from Google, and this is Learn Your Way. And the title is Reimagining Textbooks for Every Learner. And what Learn Your Way does is it kind of lets you pick, it's designed to be more personalized. So take that in with a grain of salt, but for some kids it can be pretty powerful. You start by giving it what you want to learn, something that you're interested in, how you want to learn it. Do you want audio? Do you want video? What do you want? And then it will personalize things for you. They've got a bunch of examples, and I'm going to pick the one that says history, early human evolution and migration. And when you click on it, it gets what personalization do you want to explore? Middle schooler who likes, they have a camera, or undergrad who likes tennis. So if you click on it, it gives you the different sections. So I think you can create these as well, but it's again, another way of getting resources that are differentiated and personalized, and so you might want to take a look at that and see how it works and what it does. And for some of your kids, it might work really well. For some, it might be a wilted rose.
No, say it's not so. At least not according to Access to Culture Translator. Thank you. On cue. Access to Culture Translator is talking about Enter the Wilted Rose. So here's what it is. Teens are swapping out the classic heartbreak emoji, you know, the heart with the, you know, thing, for its moodier cousin, the wilted rose, which is a rose that's, you know, tipped over, it's wilted, right? And so here's why it's trending. The heartbreak emoji is apparently so overused that it's lost its edge, lost its meaning. For lots of teens, it feels too basic and obvious now. That's where the wilted rose comes in. The wilted rose started as a way to say, I'm damaged, I'm heartbroken, I'm tragic, but with a wink. So there you go.
Okay, we have more things and resources over at middleschoolmatters.com. So I would encourage you to head over to the site. And there's links there that you can share the show with friends. You can reach out to us, and we'd love to hear from you. We also would love it if you'd head over to the podcast catcher of your choice and give us a 5-star rating. Tell us why Sean is the world's greatest co-show host. And just share with your teaching friends and coworkers and all of that. With that, this has been Middle School Matters for middle school educators who care. All opinions expressed on this podcast are exclusively the opinions of the host and guests and not indicative of any employer.